Can everybody hear me? Okay. Well, can everybody hear me? Okay. My name is Doug Hughes. I'm the author of the Reactor Persistence Framework for Cold Fusion, and I'm here to basically give a fairly quick introduction to Reactor. I'm going to cover just a small set of the most important features available within Reactor. And try to cover some of the pros and cons, what Reactor is and what Reactor isn't, and essentially everything that's covered on this slide here. What I want to do, typically when I give this presentation, I tell everybody, okay, it's going to take an hour, and 2 hours later everybody goes home. So I'm going to try to hammer through the slides real quick and then get into code, show a couple of code examples, and typically that leads to a lot of questions. And I'd like to have most of this, as much as possible, be questions and answers and examples to address that within reason. So first off, I would like to get questions. You know, there's nothing worse than speaking to a crowd of everybody who just sits, stares at you, and you hear the crickets. So please ask questions. Also, I've been asked to point out that you have the surveys in here. Would everybody please fill them out now, give me 10s, and take them to the back of the room. Okay, come on. That was a joke. Laugh. Thank you. I feel much better now. It wasn't funny, but it was a joke. Okay. So, everybody in here, I assume, has written this type of code in the past. You write a query, and immediately beneath it, you output the data, or within the same file. And there's a couple of things that are wrong with this, or that make this less maintainable over time. For instance, the data source is right there in your query. For instance, the output of the results is in the same file with the query. Therefore, the query is not reusable throughout your application. It's a mixture of your application's logic with its display. I mean, this is a simple example, but we've all been there. We've all written the page is my site kind of code before. Now, what Reactor does is Reactor applies a set of design patterns that help improve code that would have previously been written like this into something that's much more reusable, much more maintainable. And then beyond that, Reactor also helps generate some of that code that otherwise would have been very repetitive and tedious to write. And because it's repetitive and tedious, leads one to a cut-and-paste mentality where, okay, how many people here have used, for instance, data access objects, gateway objects, anything like that on a day-to-day basis? Okay. How many of you have actually used Reactor? Really, only a couple of you. Okay. For those of you who have written data access objects and gateway objects, how many of you start up with the best of intentions? Okay, I'm going to write out a DAO and I'm going to write out a gateway, and then you come along to your next object, your next set of components. What do you do when you start writing that next set of objects? Copy and paste and edit some stuff in there? That happens a lot. And in my experience, you'll never get it right. There's always subtle bugs in there, especially in the lesser used methods such as delete or variations on select if you happen to have any. And Reactor will help you get around some of that because it generates it. It's always going to write it the same way. It's never going to just copy and paste and kind of forget to put a comma here or there. So it should be more reliable than just writing it yourself. At any rate, taking a step back here, we've all written code like this. And over time, a set of design patterns have evolved that help us better the situation. These include data access objects, which provide methods for creating, reading, update, and deleting of single records within your database. And you have gateway objects, which provide mechanisms for interacting with sets of data. So if you've got one record in the database, you tend to use a DAO object, a data access object. If you've got sets of data that you want to select, you want to pull a complex query of data, that tends to go in a gateway object. And then more recently, within the last couple of years, Active Record is another design pattern that's kind of wafted up, primarily from the Ruby on Rails crowd. They've popularized it. The Active Record tends to be one object that represents one record and knows how to read itself and write itself into the database. and Reactor, as a part of Reactor, has an implementation of the active record design pattern, which coincidentally, under the covers, actually uses the gateway and DAO patterns anyway. Some drawbacks to the new way of doing things as compared to the old way of doing things. I've covered some of these things. If you're writing all these gateways, all these records, all these DAOs, if you throw in transfer objects and validators, it's very time-consuming to write all these objects. You know, where you could put one query in one file and output your data there in that same file. You know, you could write it in 15 minutes and go home. But if you've got to write X number of objects for every thing that you're going to interact with in a database, it gets very time-consuming. It's very verbose. It's also repetitive. If you've got a user object and you write all this stuff, and then you've got an invoice object and you write all this stuff, and then you've got an address object and you write all this stuff, you know, you might as well just go insane. It gets old fast. And as I said, it leads to a copy and paste mentality, and that, in my experience, leads to subtle bugs, which are prevalent in rarely used code. So, about this point, one begins to think about generating these files. And if you've got data in your database, metadata that describes the structure of your data, why not use that to generate your gateways, your DAOs, record objects, transfer objects, whatever you need? And a lot of developers do this. Many developers write their own generators to spit this stuff out. How many people in here who write their abstraction layers have written generators to spit this stuff out? There's actually more hands that went up for that than actually went up for people who write this in the first place. So that's kind of a side. More people generate it than use it. I'm sorry?
I used one that's already been written.
Brian Rinaldi's? I'm sorry, which one? The Iridium PU, yeah, okay, exactly. And that's also very common. I know a couple of people who use that. The advantage of generators is you're not doing so much laborious work to create this code, and because the generator's doing it, it's going to do it the same way every time, and you're not as likely to run into subtle bugs, subtle variations between your files. The thing is, traditionally, this technique has had its problem. Like, if you generate an object, it's almost never going to be exactly what you need. What do? Well, you edit that file, adding in what you need. Later on, a couple more fields showed up in my database. You regenerate that object, you're going to overwrite your changes, and you've got to re-implement them. A common solution for that is to extend the generated object and put your customized code in there. And that's one thing that Reactor does. Anyway, about the time where I started writing my generator, my generator is Reactor. I wanted a system where, rather than going out to a second product to generate my code into a directory for me that I've got to interact with manually every time I want to generate something, I wanted something that would just know when it needed to generate something and generate it for me, build it, and return it. That's why I've coined Reactor an inline dynamic database abstraction APAD, which just basically means it's a factory that says, if the object doesn't exist, I'm going to build it for you and then give it back to you. Here's a really simple example. I'm not going to go through this in too much detail. The first line of code here creates the core object in Reactor, which is the Reactor factory. Anytime you need to get a Reactor object, you just use Reactor factory and ask it for it. It's actually fairly simple. And it is configured via either a Reactor XML file or a separate configuration file, which is convenient when you're working with something like ColdSpring. In this example, I'm creating a record, which is just an implementation of active record, by calling create record on the Reactor factory, and it returns an address record. At that point, the address record has a typical bean structure where you can get the fields from it, you can set the fields from it, but it also has methods to load, save, and delete, among other things. Yes, sir?
Is there any way to send to create some XML in your program?
I didn't understand the question.
Is there any way to create the XML for the configuration file in programmatically?
Yeah. Reactor doesn't provide. The question is, can you programmatically generate the configuration for Reactor? And the answer is, yes, you can, but Reactor doesn't do it. So you might create your own system to introspect your database and say, okay, these are all the objects I have. These are the foreign keys. Let's spit out this XML that then Reactor will use. Reactor doesn't do that for you, but it's not inconceivable that you could do it. So Reactor is used to generate cold fusion objects that you use to access your database. Reactor automates the repetitive, tedious, error-prone work involved in creating an object-oriented database abstraction layer. Is that fairly clear? Is everybody with me so far? Okay, I see some nodding. That's a good sign. What Reactor isn't? Reactor is not Ruby on Rails. There was some confusion about that at some point in time. It's just your database abstraction. It doesn't do anything with UI. Just the other day, somebody asked me why doesn't Reactor do scaffolds. It's because it's not a scaffolding framework. It's a database abstraction layer. Another difference is that Rails is known for relying on convention over configuration. I favor configuration over convention, thus Reactor works like that. Beyond that, Reactor is not a panacea. It doesn't, and it never will do everything you need it to. You will have to customize objects you generate from Reactor to do exactly what you need, but Reactor makes that fairly easy. This slide is out of date. There are more databases supported by Reactor than I actually know. People have been contributing connectors to databases, which are actually fairly simple to write, just two files. I can't name all the databases that Reactor supports anymore, but all the commonly used databases by Cold Fusion developers. There's SQL Server 2000, 2005, that's one connector. There's separate connectors for MySQL 4 and then 5 and later, Postgres, Oracle 9i and 10g, DB2, I think Ingress is supported. There's another version of Oracle, like RDB, that's supported. I think there's even SQLite. I mean, there's a lot of connectors. If you're using a database, as long as it's not Access, Reactor will probably work with it. And if it can't, it's probably fairly trivial to make it work. Getting Reactor, this is something that people give me a hard time about all the time, Joe. I don't really provide a zip of Reactor yet. Reactor is still technically a beta. In fact, I believe it's really a beta candidate, but it's a beta, okay? For that reason, I'm still occasionally putting in bug fixes, and I still have one major feature to implement, and I haven't been making zips. There is somebody out there, I don't know who it is, who every time I commit some new code, they make a zip file. But really the best place to get Reactor is from the Subversion repository. And this is the URL to it, svn.reactorframework.com/reactors/trunk. On my blog, every time I do any of the major releases, I tend to put up a zip and make a blog entry about it. But that's it's not particularly straightforward to find. If you get Reactor from Subversion, the folders that are useful are the /reactor/reactor samples, and the documentation folders. And under the documentation folders, I used RoboHelp to generate the documentation. The actual documentation itself is under documentation/documentation/SSL! I don't know why. That's where RoboHelp puts it. Now, installing Reactor. It's really hard. Very hard. You copy it into your project's root. Done. Reactor comes with a couple of sample applications, Reactor Blog, which I'm currently using on my blog. A couple others have used it, too. There's also a contact manager, which is inspired by the Mach 2 and Model Glue contact manager applications. Contact manager is simpler. It doesn't actually use a framework other than Reactor. Reactor Blog I don't believe it uses Cold Spring. I think it's a 1.1 Model Glue application. So it's kind of an interesting way to see how, at that point in time, I used Model Glue and Reactor together. It also works on most of the supported databases, so you can see how it might work with multiple databases in one application, depending on your configuration. Now, some examples. This is the point where I'd like to get into some code and show you a little bit of how to work with Reactor. Now, I forgot to do this before the presentation. I can't figure out how to increase the font size in CF Eclipse. Does anybody know off the top of their head? Okay. There we go. It's a little large, but I think everybody can see it. This line of code is fairly straightforward. What it's doing is it's creating the reactor factory. I'm using just a call to create object. I'm calling reactor.reactor factory. As a method, when you construct that object, you're going to call the init method, and you can either pass in a path to an XML file, or you can pass in another configuration object that's provided with Reactor. If you're working with Cold Spring, you'll want to use a config object. If you're just working without a framework or without access to Cold Spring, you'll just pass in the path to your Reactor XML file. The XML file... I wasn't sure if you were trying to get rid of me. Okay, we're done here. If you're just working with the XML file and you're not working with a config object, then in your Reactor XML file, you're going to start out with a config block that takes actually 7 arguments. The 5 shown above are project, DSN, type, mapping, and mode. The other 2 that are not shown here are username and password. So if your data source requires you to pass a username and password with every query, you can just set it in here and the framework will use it. But I don't tend to do that, so it's not shown here. The project is a unique name for the project. It's kind of like an application name. Reactor will use that to generate its files into a unique location so there aren't conflicts between your projects if you've got a user in one project and a user in another project. Data source is your Cold Fusion data source name. Fairly straightforward. Type is a type of database you're working with. That's documented in the documentation. I'm working with Microsoft SQL, so I'm specifying MS SQL. If you're working with MySQL, it'd be MySQL. If you're working with MySQL 5, it's MySQL 5, so forth. Mapping is a directory into which, in your project, into which Reactor will write its generated objects, its customizable generated objects. Mapping is kind of a misleading name. It's not really a Cold Fusion mapping. It's just a directory under your site. So as you can see here, I have a directory under my project called data. That's what I've specified for my mapping. That's where Reactor will write customizable generated files. And then lastly, mode. Reactor has 3 modes, always, development, and production. In development mode, Reactor will introspect your database on every creating of objects. If you're creating a record or a gateway or a data access object, it will introspect your database to see if it's different from what's represented by that object, and if it is, it'll regenerate it for you. Otherwise, it'll just let you use what you've already got. Production, on the other hand, says if there's an object there, I'm just going to use it. And always is more for development of the framework, but no matter what, it will always overwrite anything that you have. And that's in order of slowness, it's always the slowest. Development is medium speed, and production is very fast. Underneath that config block, there's a set of object tags defined inside an objects tag. So, for instance, I've defined an object named customer, an object named address, invoice, invoice product, and product. And inside those, you can see a set of other types of tags, has one, has many, and those each define relationships to other objects. And I'll get back into this a little bit because I know that just looking at that doesn't mean anything to anybody. Let's actually take a look at the database, and we'll look at a diagram and see some relationships between these objects, and then I'll go in and show what that is within the Reactor XML file. Should have started this up beforehand. Are there any questions so far? I'm being perfectly clear. That's good. I'm glad everybody filled out the survey ahead of time. See, it gets funnier. I have a database I'm working with called Scratch. I just use a database with a random name and throw data in it for the example. It means nothing. So here's the diagram of what we're working with. I'm going to focus first off on the customer table and the address table. As you can see in the customer table, there's username, password, first name, last name, date created, so forth. And then in the address table, there's street, street two, city, state, zip. The customer has a foreign key via its address ID column to the address. That's essentially saying a customer has one address, because they can't have any more. But theoretically, an address, if you're going the other way, could have many customers. And I'm not going to get into that. But if you come over here and take a look at the customer configuration within the reactor.xml file, you can see that I've defined a has one address, and it's related by the two columns in those two tables. I know that some people get confused with the from and to. From is the object that is referring to the other object, and to is the object that is being referred to. So in this case, address ID is in customer, and address ID, the other address ID is in the address. If you go from the customer, you can see that a customer is related to an invoice via the customer ID column. Thus, a customer has many invoices. So you see here again that I've defined has many invoice. Fairly straightforward, and I just refer to the two columns. Now, a more interesting one is invoice and invoice product and product. This is a linking relationship via invoice product. So what I'm saying is an invoice has many products via this table. So it's a two-way relationship. A product can have many invoices that it's on, and an invoice can be on many products. It's a fairly common scenario. Within the Reactor XML, I've just defined invoice product, and I say an invoice product has one product, has one invoice. And then an invoice now has many products by virtue of the relationships in invoice product. And I'll show you what that actually translates to in code now. So if we come over to the index.cfm, we can see, yes, I passed in Reactor XML. And once the Reactor object, the Reactor factory object is instantiated, we can use it. So before we get too far, it's my favorite feature of CF Eclipse. Reactor. If we dump this object, you're going to see a set of methods. And the methods that I'd like to bring your, to your attention are primarily create record, and somewhere in here there's create gateway. Was it at the bottom? Never mind, it's there, okay? We don't need to actually see it physically, but it's there. But there's also a set of other methods on here that are useful, like create validator, create metadata, compile. I'll try to get to that one if we have time. That's a fairly new feature. What you can do then with the Reactor Factory is you can do something like create record. Let's start with a customer, okay? Now, I want to make a point. Before I get too far into this, you see that data folder there? I'll just refresh it so that everybody can see that there's nothing there. And I'm actually going to go a step further here and show you a little bit. I'm segueing here. This is the Reactor project itself. Underneath it, there's a set of folders, which are the core files for the Reactor framework. And in the center of that, you've got this project folder. Reactor generates two types of files. There's the Reactor-specific files that it's generating for you. Those are not customizable. They're not safe to edit. And Reactor generates those underneath its own directory hierarchy. Then within your project, within your mapping folder, it generates customizable files that extend those base objects that are safe to edit. If the customizable files exist, it never overwrites it. If the not customizable objects exist, it doesn't matter. Reactor is going to do whatever it's configured to, and it will delete them. They're volatile. You shouldn't put anything that you don't want deleted in there. And to illustrate my point, I mean, I've recently worked on these six projects, and it's generated code underneath there. And we'll take a look maybe at action packs. You've got DAOs, gateways, queries, so forth. Under Scratch, you've got a couple other folders. But you know what? I'm going to delete these things. And there's a lot of code in here. Yeah, let's take a look at Landy here. Yeah, there's a lot of code in here, but yeah, I don't really care. I'm just going to get rid of it. It's not in Subversion either. It's gone. I'm deleting it now. But I'm kind of cool with that because Reactor's just going to generate it again for me. Either that or I'm going to leave an embarrassment. What's that? Okay. Well, anyway, so the project folder is empty. There's nothing in there. We'll refresh it just to make sure. There's nothing in there. Now, let's take another look again at my code here. Reactor.createRecordCustomer. I'm going to rerun my code here, and this time it should dump out a customer record, which doesn't exist anywhere yet. And because it's never generated this object before, and because I haven't run this code yet today, oh, look, it's already done. It's now generated a customer record. You see that? And it's got set username, set address ID, other relevant methods like set date created, get date created. There's getters and setters, assessors, mutators for every property. I can speak English, I swear. There's getters and setters for every field in that table. There's a get customer ID, there's a set customer ID. There's also, for instance, load right here. You can use that to load specific records from the database. That's a fun method. There's also save. So if you modify the record, you can just call save, and it'll persist that data immediately. And there's also delete. So if you don't want it around anymore, just delete it. And the record will take care of all that via behind-the-scenes gateways and DAOs. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. We've got this object now. Let's see what else we can do with it. Let's actually look at the data in the customer table here. We've got two records in there. We got customer ID 1 and we got customer ID 4, both of which are me. What can I say? I like this tour. So let's come over here and I'm going to make a couple of changes here. CF set customer equals reactor record or create record. And I'm going to add a load method here and I'm going to do customer ID equals 1. Now down here, I'm going to dump, or actually, I'm going to output. Customer, get first name. Trying to type too fast here. And it's cold, my fingers are numb. And we'll do customer, get last name. Any bets on what this is going to write out? You see some data here. Anybody think maybe it might output Doug Hughes? If I didn't make any typos. This is the point where I wish I'd put it in production mode, but
okay.
Doug Hughes. Now, a couple of interesting points here. I've got it showing exceptions here. And you can see Reactor Object Factory, Get Object Details, not all files exist. Three of those.
That means that Reactor generated three files that didn't already exist, probably the DAO and the gateway. Because for the record, just instantiating record, you don't need those. But when it needed it to read the data out of the database, it did that. And the other one is probably a transfer object. We run it again. It'll run a little faster because I'm in development mode. It doesn't need to create all those objects this time, and you don't see the exceptions. Now, again, I can come over here and put it in production mode, and no matter what, it's never going to regenerate those objects. Now I'm going to take it out of production to avoid unnecessary bugs later on. So, fairly straightforward that you can just read an object out of the database. But let's go take a look at what Reactor's generated. If we take a look underneath Reactor itself, we've got a folder Scratch. Remember, that's what I set my project name to. That's how Reactor keeps things unique. Underneath there, I've got six folders, DAO, Gateway, Metadata, Queries, Record, TOs, which stands for Transfer Objects. And these are the objects behind the scenes that Reactor is using. So it's generated all these files. If we take a look at the customer DAO, we'll see that this thing has methods save, exist, create, read, update, delete. Exactly what you'd expect in a DAO. Well, maybe not the save. That's just kind of a smart way to do. If it already has a primary key, do an update. If it doesn't, do an insert. I'm not going to go through all the objects, but they're exactly what you'd expect. They're simple objects that do precisely what they should. Now, if we come up here into the data folder and we take a look at it, we'll see that we've got a set of files again. This time there's no queries folder. Queries is kind of a special case, but there's the five other core objects, DAO gateway, metadata record, and TL. And if you take a look at, for instance, a customer record, you're going to see there's nothing in it. Nothing at all, which is kind of cool because that extends the Reactor Project Scratch record customer record object, which has all of our generated logic in there. And if we want, we can safely add in here something like a method. Well, that's about all you'd actually put into a component, so work with me here. Get first name. Get last name. Cool. Now we got a get first name method on, or get full name method on here. We can come over here, and rather than writing this, we can just write this. Everybody with me so far? And for those on a podcast, I just added a custom method to a Reactor record to pull in the first name and last name to make a full name. And if we run this code again, then it did exactly what it should have. It output my full name. Now, let's say that we need to do something wild, like come in here and we've got to add in a new column like foo, which is an inchar. Oh, I forgot to turn on replication as a test on this database. I can't run this example. Sorry. We're just going to undo that. If I added another column to this table, because I'm in development mode, Reactor would just recognize that it update the base objects. My customizable object is unaffected. It doesn't even know that anything's changed. So all my customizations are safe. Now I'm going to quickly go into gateway objects to give an example of how you work with gateway objects. I'm going to show... Oh, yes? There's only one query to actually load the record. So up here, this big chunk here is when it's introspecting the database. So this is just checking, okay, what's the metadata in the database? If you're in production, it won't do that. I don't know off the top of my head why it's doing it so much here. But in the end, you know, I'm going to put this in production, and we'll take a look at that because it'll be a little bit more meaningful. You've got one query there, select customer IDs, customer IDs, so on and so forth. And the cool thing about it, this is fairly new within the last few months. There have been some complaints about the speed of queries behind the scenes in Reactor because it's all generated on the fly. Well, I recently added a mechanism to cache these queries into the queries folder here. So once a query is generated here, you see it outputs it here, and it's also parameterized. And this is reused every time. So you only generate the query one time, and that's absolutely made Reactor much, much faster. Thus,
is there any way to auto-generate the objects in your XML file in the SQL script?
Not quite sure. Like Hibernate, where it'll take your configuration and generate your schema. Reactor doesn't do that. It's kind of, from that perspective, it might be kind of backwards. I've always worked from the database up. Although I actually have been...
You built the database first and you had all your warranties and all your relationships.
Yeah.
Why have to type all that?
When I first started with Reactor, that's exactly what I was doing. I was introspecting the database to find out what the relationships were between the objects. Problems with that, it was slow. You didn't always need all the relationships. Sometimes relationships you have aren't actually physically represented in the database. So, you know, occasionally you might have a table which has a customer ID and another table that has a customer ID, and they're both related to the customer table. But if you wanted to do, and it's not necessarily good practice, but if you wanted to somehow imply a relationship on a customer ID field between the two, then you can do that via the configuration, but you can't introspect that because the database has no concept of that. The other thing is that not all databases I was able to find actually provided all the metadata to do that. I also looked at using JDBC to do that introspection for me, and that was just kind of a hack anyway. So, yes, sir.
Yeah, I've never really used this too often. There have been some instances where I needed maybe to
Absolutely. In fact, I do that rather routinely. If I'm working with encrypted data in a database, Reactor has no concept of that. And within SQL Server 2005, you've got to make special method calls to encrypt your data as you do the insert. And I'll override that method. And actually, what I tend to do is I'll modify the data in a transfer object and then just pass it on down to the base data access object. And that's worked fairly well for me. Yes, sir. So you're saying if you have a legacy database? Yeah, Reactor's not dependent on the actual relationships in your database. However, you know, if you try, well, Reactor does not cascade deletes. That was just kind of a safety decision on my side. So you need to go through all the steps to delete everything that you need to manually. So in your case, that's kind of irrelevant, unless you put cascade deletes in your database as a property of your database. Obviously, that'll do it because Reactor doesn't care about it. But yeah, you're not forced into foreign keys. You know, all the rope you need to hang yourself. Any other questions before I show? Okay, yes, sir. I never deploy that. First off, probably a best practice is don't use a mapping for Reactor. Just stick Reactor underneath your project folder. And in that way, all of your project's data is going to be associated with your project anyway. And then beyond that, I never deploy that with my application anyway. I just let, when I do the deployment, I use the compile method on the Reactor factory, which will use its configuration and generate all the objects anyways as part of my deployment. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. If you're in production and an object doesn't exist, it will be created. But if it does exist, it doesn't matter. It's trusted.
Right.
So, did that answer your question?
Not exactly. Like, okay, I have a production server, and I've changed my database fields.
Okay.
I've copied up all the data from my toilet server, but I still have all these old Reactor files that are pointing to old database definition.
Delete them. I'm sorry? I Reactor doesn't solve that problem.
Okay.
When I do a deployment, I frequently will copy the files up to the server. I'll go and delete the project folder from the Reactor directory and clear the template cache. Sometimes we'll even delete the compiled class files from the ColdFusion server and then restart the whole app. And that's how I tend to do it. If, for whatever reason, you don't have the ability to do that, you know, it's just not an issue that Reactor solves.
Okay, but so there's no, like, way of flags and things that can actually,
like, to automatically do it?
Well, I guess when you decide your project, you actually have to hold you and then you do the
spot. Yeah, you could do that. I'm sorry, I only caught part of the question. Can you restate, or can you say it again?
You mentioned that you customize the rows of the code that you actually generate.
Yes. That becomes a part of your application. The way I see it is you've got the framework over here that you're working with, and the framework will generate code underneath the framework, but I don't care about that. I do not put that in my repository. I don't deploy that with my application. It will always be regenerated as I need it, with some caveats, but just, you know, assume that. And then within your project, underneath your source tree, you're going to have, for instance, a data directory somewhere where the customizable objects are going to be written. I add those into source code control, and I deploy those with my applications. So that's what you need to take with your application. Did that answer? I'm sorry, I couldn't understand the question.
The files in the particle, that's also generated.
I'm terribly sorry, but I'm having trouble understanding.
If you need to override the base functionality that's generated in the project folder, where do you write your overrides?
You would do that in the customizable files. So, for instance, let's take a look at the record method here, okay? Or the record, customer record object. In here, you might have something like set first name. And this is a weak example, but it's an example. So in here, there's this method set first name. I can copy that up into my customizable object here, and I have now overridden the behavior of that. And in fact, rather than using any of this code, I can just do foo. And next time I run my code, it's going to be, I'm in production, of course. Yes, 1 second. Oh, I'm doing the setter, not the getter. Well, I am. Oh. Code on the fly. Nothing like watching somebody debug on a stage. So, Foo Hughes. Remember, I overrode that method. So, even though full name is calling get first name, I overrode get first name. It's going to return Foo. So, in this case, it's showing Foo Hughes. Now, what we're looking at here, what we're working with, is underneath this data directory, which is a part of my source code tree. This is what I put into my source code repository. Underneath there, there's a set of folders that Reactor generates. And what we are working with is the record folder. And underneath the record folder, there's two objects for the customer record. There's the customer record.csc, and there's customer record, in this case, MSSQL.csc. I was going to try to avoid getting into this, but what Reactor does is there's a whole hierarchy of objects. That at the very top level, there's a database-specific customizable file. So if you've got database-specific code, like, for instance, maybe a query that uses database particular functions that aren't available for all systems or non-ANSI SQL or something like that, you'd put that in your database-specific customizable file. Anything that's agnostic or generic can go in your customizable file, which, so this is this file, customer record, is where I'd put anything that's database agnostic. This is where I'd put anything that's database specific. Then, if you take note at customer record MSSQL, it extends customer record. Customer record extends the Reactor Project Scratch record, customer record, which is the generated object we were looking at a second ago. The generated object, in turn, then extends a base abstract record. And then that uses a mix in to pull in some common functionality. Yes, sir. No, there's not. It's one of the things that I'm kind of thinking about vaguely for Reactor 2. What I've done in that case is I'll have two instances of the Reactor factory, both configured with their own information, and I'll probably use transfer objects to move data around between them. Any other questions, or would you like to see gateways? Yeah. The Reactor framework itself, I would deploy, but I really don't care what's underneath the project folder. I'd show it to you. I'd show a deployment right now if I could. But
so you deploy the whole Reactor?
Yeah. For the most part, when I'm working with an application, I use a given version of Reactor. So hypothetically speaking, Reactor is already up on the server. When I deploy an updated version of my application, I just deploy its source code, not Reactor's source code. And then as a part of the deployment, I delete the project files in Reactor, and that forces the application to regenerate it the next time you need it. And yeah, there would be a speed penalty for that initially while all those objects are regenerated, but as soon as they're regenerated, you're done. Or you can use a compile method on the Reactor factory, which will just spend a little bit of time and forcefully regenerate all of those. Now, I would like to get into gateways. I haven't noticed any flags of time yet, but I'm sure that we're running a little low. So the other type of object that I work with most of the time is a gateway.
So we'll do a create gateway. And we'll take a quick look at that. Gateway objects you use to interact with a set of objects in your database. So if you wanted to list all your customers, you'd use a gateway. If you wanted to list all your customers in Wisconsin, you'd use a gateway. If you wanted to find all the users who purchased a specific product on your website between such and such dates, you'd use a gateway. Everybody with me on that so far? Common concept. So there we go. We've got a customer gateway. And it's still in production right now, so you can see how fast it is in production. I just hit F5 and it was there. It's very speedy in production mode. In this case, we've got, once again, a set of useful methods. For instance, get by fields, which I'll demonstrate in a second. Get all, gets everything in that table. This is kind of a handy method if you're debugging. Get last executed query. It'll tell you the last query with the parameter values that it executed previously. There's also delete all, which will delete everything from the table. Kind of a dangerous method. Delete by field, same concept. I'm not going to go through all the methods. It's fairly self-documenting. Now, let's say we wanted to see all the customers in the database. Anybody remember how many customers there were? Okay, so how many customers do you expect to see? Okay, let's run it and see what happens. Two customers, kind of handy. Let's say we only wanted the ones with last... I can't type and talk at the same time. Let's say we only wanted ones with last name Hughes. This is a trick question. How many records will you get? Well, I don't know why I'm demoing this, if you guys already know the answer. There, we got two records. But what if we wanted to get all the ones with the first name of Doug? How many records? Wrong, one. I lied. Trick question. Username. I can't remember what it is. D. Hughes? Okay. This is a better example. Pardon the caps lock. There, we got one record.
So it's kind of convenient. You've got a simple method on there where you can say, I want all the ones with the last name of such and such. And you can tack on to that, too. So you can do last name, or username D. Hughes, first name, so forth. And you just come and keep adding your properties in there, and it'll keep working. There's also... Yeah, obviously you can pass in variables. The question is, do those values have to be hard-coded? No, that's simply for an example. You can pass it in through URL or an event variable, whatever. What I prefer to do, in fact, I rarely actually use get by fields when it comes down to it. What I'll do is, if I've got something that I actually need to do that's particular, that's a query, I'll come into my customer gateway or my customer gateway for my database, and I'll write a function in there that runs a query for me and returns the data like that. I would rather not spend the time doing that right now, so I'll just see if I can quickly find one as an example in here. And I don't know that I can because I haven't... Of course, I don't have a single data folder in there. Never mind. Okay. Straightforward. Now, one other thing I'd like to get into, because that shows a case of pulling back a set of data, we haven't actually covered relationships at all. Because if we go back into our Reactor XML file, we remember a customer has one address. So wouldn't it be kind of cool if you've got a customer to be able to say, I want their address. Okay, let's do that real quick. Little undo here. So we've got our customer. Let's get their address. Favorite feature. I know. I just updated and haven't gotten around to doing it yet. Anybody have any predictions on what this will do? I heard some muttering. Okay. That's incorrect because the user only has one address. What it will do is return one address record. Oh, hey, I can't do that with a gateway. One thing that you might want to know is that a gateway object does not have a load method. So if you create a record,
then it's generating the address objects because we haven't worked with it before. But now we've got an address record. So to state what happened, by virtue of a customer being configured with a has one relationship on the address ID field, it's going to, by having a relationship to the address record, your customer object is going to end up with a method called getAddress. And there's kind of some cool things that you can do with this that I'm going to try to cover real quickly. Like, for instance, if I get a customer's address and I change the address, set street foo, and I save the customer, any predictions on what's going to happen to that address? Let's find out. So I didn't output anything, so nothing came up. But if we come over to the address table and take a look in there, let's see if we can figure out which address it was I updated. Maybe address 1? In fact, just to prove that there's no smoke and mirrors here, I'll change it to foo bar. We'll rerun it. And we'll take a look at the database, refresh it, and you see that foo bar has been updated. Fairly convenient. So if you've got kind of a hierarchy of objects, a composition of related data, then whatever the parent is, you can just call save, and it'll cascade down the lines. Another nice thing is if you have objects in there, even sets of objects that separate other objects that haven't been updated, those will be skipped, but everything that has changed will be saved. Any questions on that before I quickly hop into iterators, more complex stuff? Well, right now, a customer has many invoices, so they have more than one invoice, and I'll use this as an example to address that. The question is, what happens if the customer has more than one address? This is just an example database, and I set it up like that for a simple example. In this case, a customer has multiple invoices. Thus, somehow or other, it'd be really nice to be able to work with all those invoices. So what we can do is, from the perspective of the customer, here, I'll just get rid of this here. CF set, not CD set, invoices equals customer.get invoice iterator. I'll come back and explain what that means. Favorite feature. Had to remember the syntax for a second. Okay. An iterator object is an object that holds a set of other objects. With any iterator, you can either work with the actual objects themselves or you can interact with it as if it were a query. And in this case, I'm just getting the raw query data behind the scenes of this customer's invoices. And honestly, I don't know how many invoices this customer has. So let's run this thing. It's got to regenerate stuff because it doesn't exist yet. So there's going to be a bit of a delay while it does that. And then it's going to output the invoices. And as we can see, they've got two invoices. Now, this is kind of a little bizarre because if you take a look at the diagram, which is out here somewhere, it's convenient that they've got the invoice, but the real meat of what's on the invoice here is in the product table. So it's really nice that we can see a query of these invoices, but there's really no useful data in it. But what you can do is, for instance, you can get at the first item in here, and we'll see when we do this, that we should end up with an invoice record. And if we take a look at the invoice record, it's kind of cool because it has many products by virtue of the length through the invoice product table. Now, I realize I'm kind of going fast because I've got the 5-minute warning there, which means I missed the 30-minute warning. So let's see if we can get at the products on this invoice real quick. Get a query of all the products. And if I can find CF Eclipse, it would be really helpful. So get product iterator, and we'll just get a query of all the products on that invoice. Now, it's got to generate the product iterator, it's got to generate the product objects, and it's got to generate the invoice product. It's faster than I can talk, okay? And we can see that there is a lamp on that invoice with a price of $100. And if we wanted to see the second one on there, we could get at item two. And there's all sorts of methods on the iterator to assist you. Yes, Joe? You know the answer to this. Yes. What Reactor does with an iterator, like the N plus one problem is what Joe's asking about, which is that if you've got an object and it's got 10 other objects, theoretically you have to do 11 queries to get all that data, or if you're doing it for each record, which would be kind of silly, or you've got, maybe I'm a little backwards here, because it does have to do a query to get the data into the iterator. But the data in the iterator is in one query, and you work with the query. The iterator transparently works with that query to create your records and to indicate what's been deleted and what hasn't been. The actual structure of the query behind the scenes is considerably, well, it's got an extra column that Reactor uses behind the scenes to maintain state. Like, you can delete items out of an iterator, and they'll no longer show up in the query. Or you can add items into the record, or excuse me, into the iterator, and it will then show up. So, as you can see with the second invoice, there's a lamp, another lamp, yet another lamp in my product. And that's kind of a convenient way to work with it. If you wanted to get at all the objects in that iterator as if they were regular old objects, you'd just, let's see if I can remember this now. I don't remember the method name, so let's dump the iterator real quick and look at it, my favorite feature. We'll take a look at the product, or the iterator that holds it. Just get parent. Oh, just real quick, while I've got you. If you see methods in Reactor with an underscore in front of it, they are not pseudo-private. There's kind of an assumption that if you see an underscore in a method, it means don't use it. The reason I put that in there is to avoid conflicts with other methods that might be generated and have the same name. So if you see an underscore, if it's a public method, you're free to use it. So let's see, is get last executed query. So again, on the iterator, you can get the last executed query, which is kind of handy. Get next, if you're looping over the iterator, you can say has more is a method. So you can do CF loop condition equals iterator.hasMore. And on each loop, you can do get next, and it'll just get the next item out of the iterator. Get where, that's kind of useful. You can filter down the items in the iterator. So if you only wanted to get all the items from your invoice that had a price over $100, you can use portions of what I call object-oriented queries to specify that criteria, and you can filter down the data in the iterator on a fly like that. Get dictionary, get linked, get query. We've all seen. Oh, get array. I should have known that. Not like I wrote it. So we run this now. We're going to get an array of, I think it was four records, was it? If I didn't type something wrong. Am I back in development mode? Yeah. So we'll just run that again to illustrate the difference. So run it a couple of times. Each time here, we are getting four product records on that invoice. So you can either work with a query fairly easily, or you can work with the records themselves in an array fairly easily. Yes, sir?
Can you put a where statement in an iterator?
Yes, actually, that's what I was just talking about. I think I've got enough time to show this, and that's probably going to be my last example. I might not even have enough time to do that. I'll give it a shot real quick. Crazy mouse. What'd you say, Joe? Oh, I thought you were Joe. Sorry. CIF set where... behind the scenes, Reactor uses what I call object-oriented queries, and it's a method of abstracting the API of, like, or excuse me, defining the declaration of what you want to receive, but in an object-oriented manner. So I can do CIF set. I can get the where statement. I can say where dot. I don't know. Let's take a look at what's in a where object real quick, because I don't know what to filter by. What's it? Okay, so in here, is like, that's a good one. Yeah. So I can do like CIF set where.is like, And I think it's the table name, so in this case, product. And then the column name. And I don't remember what the products were, so let's take a look at those real quick. Oh, how about lamp, okay. Was it product name? Name. And let's say lamp. So, lampy. Theoretically, when we run this now, and I'll get the query instead of the array because it's a little bit more useful. Kind of doing this on the fly, but oh yeah, there we go.
So it's only showing the ones with lamp in it.
And there's a whole set of methods on the where object that will let you filter it down. You can combine them, so you can say where is like this and is like this and then greater than that. And you can do combinations of where statements, so you can do like they essentially simulate parentheses in your where statement. You can join on to other tables through object-oriented queries and through iterators, but with the case of iterators, you're only going to get the core object that you're working with. You can just use that join to filter down the data further if you need to. And I just before I get to your question, I just wanted to state that you guys have seen just a fraction of what is in Reactor. It's actually a very large framework. It's very in-depth. There's a lot of power to it, and there's a lot of power in the customizations. And one last question.
Can you create subqueries in the
No, write your own queries to do that. That sounded kind of rude, but what I mean is you can always write your own queries. So if Reactor doesn't support something, just write your own query, and you're good to go. I'm going to wrap things up because I can see people milling around in the hallway, but if you've got questions, come up to me and ask, and I'll address them. Thank you.